And this is WHTC in Holland. It's time now for Talk of the Town, the program in which you, the listeners, participate with your telephone calls. Our Talk of the Town number 395-1450. Our guest this morning is Dr. Tom Burns. Good morning, Doctor.
Good morning, Duke.
And what do we got on the agenda this morning?
Well, it's another great day in West Michigan. The sun's out, so we can get more skin cancer, I guess, if you go out. But we all like the sun. We all like West Michigan when it's nice Michigan weather, which is too bad we don't have it at least 8 months of the year. But
that would be nice.
It would be. Michigan would be great. It's great anyway. You know, they say that the weather in Michigan changes. Just wait 5 minutes. Isn't medicine kind of the same way? Don't you, as a citizen, can you really keep up with medicine? It seems like 1 minute you say something's good, and the next minute it's bad, and not sure what's happening.
That's almost day to day.
Exactly, and yet we're living longer because of modern medicine. We all have to understand that there are good things for us to eat. There are good things for us to have. Those of us that have regular routines in society are going to have less disease than those that are kind of helter-skelter in what they do. 50 years ago, we had a general biorhythm. Every other animal on the face of the earth has a biorhythm. It is innately in them to get up at a certain time. They eat pretty much the same thing every day. They go to bed at the same time. That's how outfitters that hunt know where animals are going to be. But we're different. And there was a time that the day started early morning. It ended in the end of the day or before sundown. And we had a regular rhythm that we know. When I did my graduate work, we did studies on animals. If you switched around when you fed them and how you studied their biorhythms and their physiology, that you could actually mess up their physiology by just changing when they eat and changing when they sleep, and we're that way. And so we are the product, in some of our problems, we're the product of just bad habits, not a regular routine. Just think of 50 years ago, hardly anybody worked third shift. Those that cleaned up the furnaces for the refineries and stuff and the police force, but the average individual went to work in the early morning, left in the afternoon, had time with their family, friends, unless you had a store and you might be open till 9 or 10, but you had a pretty rhythm. So that's a thing that has changed just in our culture. But in medicine, a lot of things change, and these things are changing rapidly because people do studies, and today it costs millions and millions of dollars to pass a drug or to do a study. And so sometimes we do studies, and those studies don't give us the answer we were thinking we were going to get or we're looking for, but they give us some other issues, and then hardly anybody wants to go back and spend that money to recheck it, where years ago we would recheck those studies. So every day you're at the kind of mercy of people that make drugs and people that develop routines or develop apparati, and we've heard about how much irradiation hurts us if we get too many CT scans or MRIs and how much certain drugs. But in medicine, there's always been studies that try to confirm certain things that which we make decisions from. But one of them that is interesting is you and I, when we go to your dentist, if you happen to have had a heart operation, or you have a valve, or you have just a murmur, say your doctor will ask you to, or your dentist will ask you to ask your doctor to have antibiotic, for instance. But that is interesting because that's what we give people to prevent infection of the valves of the heart. But you know that there's never, ever in the history of medicine been a study that confirms that we should give an antibiotic to somebody that has a murmur. And that's just kind of strange because you and I are told, read every day in the, if you're sitting waiting for your doctor for so long, you know everybody does that. They have to wait to see their doctor, and that's kind of sad too. But we read all these studies and we get our opinion, right? But that's one, for instance, that we as doctors do routinely because if somebody does come down with an infection, then there's going to be all kind of suits. And so that's a case where we do something that nobody's ever really studied, but it kind of made sense. There are a lot of those kind of things going on. But let me just say I got a number of articles in front of me, but one that just kind of popped out to me is the one that right now we know that cigarettes, we should get rid of cigarettes. Now, I've never been a smoker. I've always been a pro-alternative medicine, healthy person, but I also didn't deny that some people that want cigarettes should have that right to do it, as long as they don't get by me, you know. But one of the things we've come with, all these different ways of getting rid of smoking, and one of those is called e-cigarettes. Well, there's just an article out where the FDA now, they don't control that, so they want to control it. And one of the statements right at the beginning, now, why do you use e-cigarettes? Kind of nice, because it looks like a cigarette, it acts like a cigarette,
tastes like a cigarette.
But do you know that the first statement in this article, which is in the American Medical News article for this month, the first statement that the e-cigarettes have now shown to be more addictive than regular cigarettes.
Really?
So sometimes money drives us because we think the way it's marketed, but that's the comment made. And nobody was doing anything as far as getting people off cigarettes, except back in the 50s and 60s and 70s, there was a plan called the 5-Day Plan, became the Breathe Free Plan. And actually, I started doing that in the 1960s when I was in grad school, and when I came here, nobody was doing getting people to try to get off their cigarettes. So I started doing a couple of those a year, and that was a 5-day or breathe free plan. But as soon as it became obvious from open heart surgery that smoking was a problem and that it was related to early heart disease, in fact, the first open heart surgeries they did, every open heart surgery, about the first 5 years of open heart surgery, every person that died from their first heart attack, male that died from the first heart attack, or required open-heart surgery under the age of 50, were men that were smokers with high cholesterol. So smoking became an obvious thing. And once the Surgeon General declared that as a health risk, then all kind of people come out of the woodwork to tell you how to stop smoking. And one of those now is e-cigarettes. And so that's kind of going to change. But I'll just comment on that there is a medicine called Chantix, but Chantix, like every other medicine, is not perfect because some people have side effects. Everything we take, every medicine we take, has a risk. You've heard me say before, there's no perfect medicine, there's no bad medicine. Every medicine made helps someone, has no side effects in that individual, and every medicine made, including penicillin, may cause a reaction and even death. So every medicine is good for someone and not good for someone else. But that's also true of our alternative medicines. People will spend hundreds of dollars a month for something they get off the internet that's never been tested, that you could never get past today because it only works about 50% of the time, and there are individuals that have reaction to alternative medicines as well. So that e-cigarette is one example. Now, another one that's coming along is that there's a medicine that has been used for some time in diabetes, has been taken off. These are medicines like Actos mainly, and these medicines now are starting to be reevaluated because they were very good at helping people to lower the
diabetes. And we have a call here.
The diabetes.
Good morning. You're online with the doctor.
Good morning.
Hello.
Good morning.
Good morning. You're online with the doctor.
Good morning. I wonder if the doctor has any comments about something called POMACO, POMACO. I received it in the mail yesterday, and apparently they want people to give them information that will allow them to access information from your Medicare records. And it sounds like they're wanting to do you a good turn, but I've never heard of that before. It's an accountable care organization. I wonder if he's heard anything about it.
Well, as a physician, that some of those things are real concerning to us, because one of the things I'll comment, that's one of them, but another one is that some of your Medicare patients may get a call or a letter from a doctor you don't even know that wants to come and visit you.
Mm-hmm.
And you you assume that it's real, but, you know, you wouldn't let anybody else in your house without knowing for sure, would you?
Right.
But they show up, and I've had patients tell them they don't want to, but they said, well, they're representing the insurance company here, and they want to come in and talk to you and even examine you. They do very little. They're getting paid a lot of money to just come in and talk to you and check your medicines and make a judgment about your doctor. They know nothing about the doctor, and in fact, we know nothing about their training. In fact, some of them are less trained than the individuals you may be seeing, and certainly less experienced at times. Now, this is the type of freedom that some of the insurance companies and Medicare is taking. It's all in Medicare patients. That's paying a lot of money for professional fees for someone to just duplicate what you're already being taken care of, and yet they don't call you and ask you first, are you happy with your care? Are you doing well? And if they wanted to, they can get the records from your insurance company.
Okay.
See, they don't have to come to you. Your insurance company has all those records.
Right.
And they could get those records as far as what medicine you're on, and what they can even get if the Medicare, if your insurance company authorizes, they can get a copy of your last office visit, what
sure.
your doctor said, etc. This is a gathering of data, people getting money for it, and has nothing to do with your quality of care.
Okay. Well, the thing was, included with all the information is also a paper, a sheet of paper, that says notice to patients, and then it has one of my doctors, his name is it, participating in an accountable care organization. It doesn't sound like something he would do, but they've got his name on there, so it's like, what's happening to our privacy?
Well, first of all, you know, they can do that, and the only one that can probably have any effect on stopping it or to regulate it or to evaluate it and see if it's legit or not is him.
Okay.
Or her.
Sure.
The physician's the only one that can really say if they're using his name inappropriately. Chances are that this is being authorized by the insurance or managed care group that he is a participant in, and they're using his name. Maybe
okay.
sometimes it could be even without his acknowledgement.
I see.
I think the thing that, to me, I don't have a problem with people calling my patients, say, do you like your doctor or not? And if they say, no, he's a jerk, then tell him to get a different doc. You know, that's okay.
No, I don't have that problem either.
You know, but they don't call you. They don't call you and say, you know, how you're doing, whatever. And that's really where they would get the best information, is talking to you as a patient,
okay.
gathering that data, in my opinion, What is your opinion of your care?
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is there's a movement that wants to make you take medicine sometime that you don't want to.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things, for instance, you know, I always say I've never had a patient 65 or older ever tell me to make sure I keep them alive. They always told me when I was head of CCU and head of the internal medicine in the hospital, and that when I had a lot of intensive care patients, they always said, just make sure I don't have any pain.
Right.
You know, that's their biggest concern.
Absolutely.
Now, the thing is that all of us have a different opinion. A good colleague of mine I've known for years, it's a partner that was with me, he commented the other day that he has a bad family history of Alzheimer's and that, so he doesn't want to take a whole bunch of medicine that's going to make him live longer
right.
he ends up the last decade of his life with Alzheimer's.
Mm-hmm.
That's a perfectly legitimate opinion of him
sure.
as a patient, and they don't call you. That this is all about business, remember.
Okay.
This is not about a better quality of life. This is about business. And also remember, when you and I stay alive longer with a lot of problems, even if we have a loss of memory and everything, it's a very lucrative business. So,
sure.
We all, as patients, as citizens, and as doctors, should all be in this dialogue of what's happening in medicine.
Right, and I God has blessed me with some wonderful doctors, and I don't have any that I could say are jerks.
Well, I'm just talking about if they feel that way about me. You know, I'd have no problem if they don't like me, don't want to come in and see me. Then
right. I don't need that either.
No, doctors are all, we're all different, and the thing is that I think the thing that I'm trying to make is that they don't call you, and you're the real important part. The important part of this relationship is you as the patient.
Well, absolutely.
It's not the doctor. It's not the hospital. That's not the important. The important part is you and I as patients, and they don't call to find out from you. They want to send you something that you can fill out so they can put it in a file, and they make it look like they're doing a good business. But in some ways, they're not helping.
That's what they've done. There's form to fill out, and it's like, well, we're doing you a service, but I don't believe that at all. I think that's just for their own business, and my business is not their business. So I am inclined to say no, and they give me a choice. You may say yes or no to this if you want to fill things out, but you can still see any doctor, or go to any hospital. We're working to improve your care. Well, my care is good the way it is. So
yeah, and that's the thing, is why spend the money? But I think that's something that we all have the right to talk to our doctor about when we go in to see him.
I will be doing that as well, but I wondered what your thought was.
Yeah, and, you know, to be honest with you, almost everyone likes their doctor. You know, that's the nature of the business, is that we're trained to be competent in what we do, but we're also trained and realize that our job is to make sure we do what's in your best interest,
right,
and related to your medicine. And almost every doctor does that. And we are very fortunate in Western Michigan. Howland Hospital has grown tremendously since I came here many years ago.
Yeah.
And it's always been to the betterment. And your doctors are, they're trained different. They're trained more extensively now in all the high-tech stuff. So everybody loves their doctor, and the main thing is that I think any of these organizations that are spending millions and millions and millions of dollars just to collect paper and pay people that, whether it's just a way of giving them jobs and make it look good or whatever, I don't know.
Sure.
But the fact is, none of them call you and say, how are you doing? Do you have a complaint?
Right.
What are you concerned about? So that's never, it's not focused on what your concern is. It's focused on their concern.
Well, of course, I read through the lines, and I understand that too. But I just wondered what you had thought of that.
Okay.
So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for the call.
Thank you. Bye.
And if you have a question for the doctor, give us
from 10:10 to 11. This Saturday, we'll discuss tax planning if you are close to retirement.
We'll be glad to take your calls and emails too, so join us for WHTC Money Matters this Saturday.
And a look at our Holland area weather. Weather brought to you by our friends at the okay, I know the name of the place. I should know the name. All right. It's at the Wooden Shoe Restaurant. Yeah. And come out there for lunch and pick a pair. And a quick weather here. Mostly sunny today with a high of 80. Tonight partly cloudy, a low of 54. And tomorrow abundant sunshine, a high 77. Right now 63 degrees in the Tulip City. And we have another call coming in. Good morning. You're online with the doctor.
Good morning, Juke. I would like to reiterate something that was said by Dr. Burns. When these people come into your house, my husband has always been very physically active, has a naturally low blood pressure, not on any meds. He also has an irregular heartbeat known as the Winky Bock, which he does not have to take medicine for. And the person who came to the house last year never checked his blood pressure, never checked his pulse, just sat there and asked some questions about the medication he was on, and, you know, our insurance company paid for this. What a waste of time and waste of our money.
Okay, thank you. And we have another call coming in, I do believe, yes. Good morning, you're online with the doctor.
Good morning.
Good morning.
You had talked about the e-cigarette. What is the best way to quit smoking? I'll hang up and listen to you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, you know, it's like I said, I've done a lot of these, but it's interesting. Smokers fall into three groups. There's that third of the group that started smoking when we were in high school or whatever. We really don't like it. We just kept it up. And just, you know, meeting a girlfriend or boyfriend that says, I'm not going to date you if you keep smoking, we'll quit. And so there's a third that just want to get off, and they taste a little. There's a third that doesn't really like the smoking that much, but they keep at it, and they kind of got addicted to it, and it becomes a friend, and they need some help with smoke stopping. And then there's a third that really likes it. And of that third that really likes it, half of those people won't start trying to change unless something happens that scares them, like chest pain or heart attack or a stroke or something or cancer. And they will, it'll take some time for them to get off doing different things. And a third and a half of that group will even smoke through their stoma when they have their larynx removed or their voice box, and they have a little hole in their neck. Some of those will even smoke through that until the day they die. So that's kind of the ray we got. So most of them fall in that group that wants to quit. Now, first of all, to me, there was a medicine that came along. It's called Wellbutrin. It was designed for depression, and they found out that in the studies in the hospital that some of the that they were having the study, so there were people getting a medicine every day they didn't know, and another group that were getting something that was the true medicine, which was the Wellbutrin, and they found out that some of these guys weren't asking for many cigarettes, and so Wellbutrin became marketed then quickly as Zyban. So it's the same medicine, and it's one of the medicines that has been shown to, in about half of the people that use it, that it decreases their urge to smoke. And in a combination of that, what I do is one of the things when we smoke is it has to do with all the mechanical things, putting something in your mouth, getting it. You know, when you become a good smoker, you can grab your cigarettes up at the side of the bed at night and light them. So then what I do is I have individuals use a medicine called nicotrol inhalers. It's got the nicotine in it that they can gradually reduce, but it also eliminates the smoke, which gives us our cancer. Not the nicotine keeps us addicted, but it's the smoke and the tars that give us our heart disease and cancer. So those are the two, and the Zyban is the other one. None of the others, when you put patches on or chew gum and keep smoking, you just double up your addiction. So think of the Wellbutrin, talk to your doctor, or your Zyban along with nicotrol inhalers, or the Zyban are the ones that have worked the best.
Good morning, you're online with the doctor.
Good morning.
Yes, you're on with the doctor.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I would just like to know, how serious is AFib and what do you do about it? And thank you.
Thank you.
Well, every year people will die from atrial fibrillation because it's the greatest risk of atrial fibrillation is that we can form clots in the upper chambers of the heart. Many, many years ago when I was in cardiology or at Mayo, the thing then was to try to get that converted to a regular beat so that you didn't have that atrial fibrillation. And it was very difficult in people with bad disease, bad heart disease, or those that have weak muscle, that they would keep going back into the atrial fib. So today, we do try to convert that individual into a normal sinus rhythm when they are early in the incidence of developing atrial fib. After they have atrial fib and they don't convert well, the main thing is we want to keep them from having clots and we want to keep their heart rate down. We found out that whether they were in atrial fib or not doesn't really matter as long as we keep their heart from racing. With atrial fib, they could have heart rates running up to 150, 175 beats a minute. And for an older patient like me and you, Juke, that we couldn't hand that. So what they did is we now use a medicine to slow that down. And if we keep their heart rate down 80 to 100 in that area, they do quite well, and it's not a big issue, except that they're in that atrial fib, so we have to keep them from getting blood clots. Now, that comes to another issue, and that is that there was an old medicine that we still use called warfarin, which was developed by Wisconsin Agriculture Department to kill rats. And so people always say, yeah, it's just decon. Well, it is. It's just decon. But it keeps our blood thin. Thin means that it just doesn't mean you got less blood or it's not as good a blood. It just doesn't clot as fast. And so when you have an INR of 2, it means it takes twice as long to clot. And so The thing is that that medicine, if you get in trouble with it, you have too much, we have an antidote. We can give you vitamin K or other things to change it. There's new movement where there are medicines that you take, but they have no way to test it. They don't know if you're taking too much or they don't know if you're taking too little. They just know that if you take a put a bunch of people on this, a certain number of them will have less clots. There's two schools of thought. There's those that cardiologists, because one thing is younger trained people are trained to use it, but older trained people or even some younger look at what is the risk. The risk of being in atrial fib and developing a clot is your biggest risk. The other thing is if we don't control the rate. But controlling the rate is very simple. There's all kind of medicines we give people for heart, for blood pressure that will control the rate. That's the most important thing. Second thing is that if you have atrial fib, you have some type of heart disease, so you're going to follow with your cardiologist, internist, or whatever. But the third thing is keeping that clot form. And there's a new medicine. These new medicines, there's some individuals and some doctors, I happen to be one, that's not a great fan. And some of the big institutions around the country, like the big place like Johns Hopkins, and I'm not saying them, but some of those kind of institutions still are very reluctant to use it in a lot of patients because we don't, if you get in trouble and bleed from it, we don't know how to stop it without giving you blood. So those are the things. The main thing, keep it controlled. If you have it, you have it. Your cardiologist will help you control that. They'll take care of it. We're very good at it. And if you're real bad, they can actually do surgery where they just put a catheter in there and they create a blockage of those fibers being able to generate that atrial fib. And so there's a lot of things in high-tech medicine that we didn't have 50 years ago. And so if you have atrial fib, you still should be able to get to 100 if you want to.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the big thing.
Well, that's something to look forward to.
Anyway, huh? If we want to get to 100, there's some of us that say that's for somebody different than me. But that's where cardiology have come. There's some tremendous things in medicine, but it's changing every day. It's like a chameleon. One thing you think wasn't good, now it is. We know that aspirin's good for us. And some people, in fact, the aspirin. We know that individuals that take aspirin routinely have a decreased risk of colon cancer. That has been known for some time. So there are little things that we do. One of the worst medicines we have, if you get addicted or if you're taking too much, is Tylenol, because it can have tremendous liver problems. And there's a lot of other things. We're almost out of time here, but there are a lot of other medicines too. We don't have time to talk about today, but we'll catch it next month. God willing, Juke, you and I, if our heart's still beating and we're not in atrial fib,
we'll be here.
We will be here.